Just who is the gold statue at Providence and Queens? What is the mysterious four-story glass structure being built on South Boulevard? Which national chains got their start in the Charlotte area? Vote for your favorite question and the FAQ City podcast will answer it on WFAE.org/FAQ City. This is a special News and Brews edition of Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. It's News and Brews because we spend the hour talking about the upcoming primary from Birdsong Brewing in NoDa. We can promise the news part, you're on your own for the brews. For those listening on Thursday morning, we're actually recording this at Birdsong at a respectable time on Wednesday night with a quartet of political experts set to talk about the races and candidates and just how competitive the primary next Tuesday may be. We'll also talk about the stakes. That's S-T-A-K-E-S because there apparently is no food here tonight. Democrats are hoping for a blue wave here and around the country in the fall, and that wave, if it forms, starts with Tuesday's election. Of course, it may turn out that voters choose the status quo over choices that would tip the balance of power in Raleigh and Washington, and we'll get opinions on that from the leaders of the two parties in Mecklenburg County, as well as their thoughts on how their prospective parties and candidates can best persuade voters. We invited two unbiased political junkies who have been watching North Carolina politics for a long time to join us. Dr. Michael Bitzer is here. He's the chair of the Department of Politics at Catawba College, and Jim Morrill is a longtime political reporter for the Charlotte Observer. Welcome back to you.
Good to be here. Thank you. Well, you may have a dog.
On the political side of the equation, Jane Whitley is here. She's the chair of the Mecklenburg County Democratic Party, and her counterpart is Chris Turner, chair of the Mecklenburg County Republican Party. Is that your security detail, Chris?
We brought a detail, that's right.
Okay. There has been a lot of talk, Michael, particularly among Democrats, about this so-called blue wave that may or may not be coming in November, and whether or not that happens, do they have a shot of getting help in that endeavor from candidates and races in North Carolina?
I think certainly candidate quality matters. I think what we're seeing this year, particularly in some of the special elections, is that the candidate that fits the district tends to help in that regard. And so that's creating some interesting dynamics when it comes to trying to say what exactly is the Democratic Party. You've got a wide spectrum. Mm-hmm. And I think here in North Carolina, particularly in some districts, you're going to have some Democrats that may be more moderate in tone as compared to nationally the Democratic Party as a whole. And I think, you know, looking at some of the special elections, the Pennsylvania 18th congressional election, I think that was very much a test case for how a Democrat needs to run within the district and appeal to the district values, norms, beliefs there, as opposed to a national kind of perspective.
So let me ask Jane Whitley, as chair of the Mecklenburg County Democratic Party, how confident are you that there is a blue wave coming either to North Carolina or to the nation as a whole?
I think you can count on that. There is a blue wave coming.
Why?
The phone started ringing at the Democratic Party headquarters the day after the election in 2016. It hasn't let up yet. There are a lot of factors at play, but the Democratic Party is the party of ideas. We are the party that helped to build the city. We have so many enthused, engaged volunteers who are coming out to get involved. People are wanting to know what to do. And just to give you an example, there are 195 precincts in Mecklenburg County. Right now, we have a record number of them organized, about 75%. And we plan to get them all organized. And they're getting organized in areas that are not traditional Democratic strongholds. We have a North Mecklenburg Democrats organization now. The South Mecklenburg Democrats have organized. And these folks are really engaged. They want to get involved. And it's being led, I will have to tell you, by mostly women. And we do make up 54% of the vote, thank you. And we really want to see a change in this state and in the country.
So Chris Turner, I'm going to guess that you have a different take on this.
We do. Absolutely, okay. We do. And when it comes to organization and women in politics, women have been leading the Republican Party for decades. We've had three Republican women's groups that have been actively engaged across the county in North Mecklenburg, Central Charlotte, as well as in South Mecklenburg. We are also taking the same steps of being organized. We've created area precinct organizers that are in every district across the county, making sure that we are organized, every precinct is staffed, that we have volunteers that are out knocking on doors. We understand that this is a blue moon election. At the top of the ticket are judges' races that are statewide, and there are no other statewide or national races, and so we have to focus on local issues. And that's what we plan to work with our candidates to talk about in the election.
So, Jim, if this turns out to be a blue wave, or it doesn't turn out to be a blue wave, is that because of what happens in the primaries or because the Democratic candidate is stronger or weaker than the Republican candidate?
Yeah, I don't think it's because of the primaries. I think that the primaries will sort of resolve themselves. But I think you'll see it in November. I think there's a couple congressional districts in North Carolina that Democrats are hopeful about flipping. Beyond that, not so much. But one of the districts is the 9th district that goes from Charlotte to Fayetteville, where Dan McCready, who hasn't even won a primary yet, but he's way outraced his Democratic opponent, yep. Christian Cano. He's a kind of a moderate Democrat. He's a Marine veteran who has a chance to be like the gentleman in Pennsylvania, Connor Lamb, who would appeal to more moderate voters as well. And there's a woman up in from Greensboro named Kathy Manning, who's in the 13th district, who has outraced the Republican incumbent in that district. So you can see it in both of those districts.
How much of the, because Chris just mentioned that this is a blue moon election. There's no statewide race. There's no president running. There are no senators running. And therefore, maybe people will stay home because, who cares? But the truth is, this is the election to care about, it would seem to me. Mm-hmm. But how much of this is going to be dependent on turnout, whether or not the Democrats take things over?
Elections always depend on turnout. I mean, it's just the fundamental precedent.
But don't Republicans generally turn out stronger for off-year elections?
In North Carolina, in midterm elections, typically you tend to have a higher percentage of registered Republicans turning out in midterms than you do Democrats. Now, in 2006, which ironically was the last blue moon election cycle, you actually had the two major parties tied at 40% turnout in November. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's going to be about mobilization. It's going to be about energy. It's certainly, I think nobody can dispute the fact that Democrats are energized. They are just trying to overcome some obstacles that are already built into it that they have to be able to overcome in order to be successful in November.
Both of our party chairs are going to tell me their parties are energized, so I'm not going to ask you about that. But what, Jane, for the Democrats is the motivating factor? Is it Donald Trump? Is it the candidates themselves? Is it what we've seen, at least in North Carolina, from the Republican-led legislature that Democrats don't like? What is the motivating factor for your voters?
I think it's a little bit of all of the above, but Donald Trump is the running mate for every Republican running in North Carolina, and especially in Mecklenburg County. So even though his name's not on the ticket, that is in the forefront of thought of everyone's mind. But I have to say, the North Carolina legislature has really not gotten anything done. This is all attack politics. Mm-hmm. They haven't made strides to help our economy or to help pay our teachers or to help to strengthen the schools. It's been all about partisan gerrymandering. It's been about, I understand now, they're going to be talking about perhaps adding constitutional amendments to further affect the judicial system. So these are the things that are bread and butter issues that are not being addressed. And I believe that Mecklenburg voters are looking in that, and they are seeing that this government is not serving our needs as a community.
So, Chris Turner, for Republicans, is it Donald Trump? Is it the federal tax cut that your people are particularly proud of? Is it the legislative accomplishments that you perceive to be good for North Carolina that motivates Republicans to want more of the same? What's going to get people to the polls, and why are they energized?
I think it's telling the story to our citizens and having them respond back.
What is the story?
How many people think teachers should make more than $40,000 a year, right? Every hand's raised. Well, the Republicans have increased it to $50,000 over the last 8 years. We've got to tell that story. Teacher pay has gone up 11% over the last 5 years. That is something that hasn't happened under Democratic leadership. We've increased revenues by $2.3 billion for our state since 2011. What does that mean for the individual? That means that we've been able to reduce the tax base to 5.25%. So if you're a small business owner, you have more money in your pocket. And in communities of color, you're able to recycle that money in your community rather than seeing it go to state and federal taxes. So we want to make sure that we take those issues that are out there, that more people have more money in their pocket, more people are paying zero taxes than ever before, that we are in a state that is inviting more business every day here, that we won on gerrymandered maps in 2010 that Democrats designed, that this is not a new issue. That in Mecklenburg County, we talk about gerrymandering, but it's 2-1 in terms of Democrats holding seats to Republicans, which is exactly how the map should have been driven, because that's what Democrats and Republican registration is. So the story of gerrymandering just isn't true in Mecklenburg County. And that's the story we've got to go out and tell voters.
Michael, is that true?
In terms of
gerrymandering?
Gerrymandering certainly is a play in this, and particularly in something like the 9th Congressional District. Donald Trump got 54% of the vote. Robert Pittenger got 58% of the vote. So there is a close correlation in terms of people voting for president and then down the ballot. There's not any kind of split ticket voting going on. I think in terms of gerrymandering, yes, 2010 certainly benefited the Republicans, but they were benefited also from the Tea Party insurgency, and that helped. I mean, you had 50% voter turnout among registered Republicans, mm-hmm. So that also played a factor into it as well.
There have been lots of elections in North Carolina, particularly in the midterms, where many of the candidates have run unopposed, and Jim, that is not the case this year. There is no legislative seat going unchallenged. At least they won't be in the general election in November. And the crowd goes wild. So what changed? Why now?
I think both parties just made a concerted effort to get somebody on the ballot. But having said that, a lot of these races aren't truly competitive. You know, there are Republican districts that might have a nominal Democratic challenger, and there are Democratic districts that have a nominal Republican challenger. And so in those districts, you're going to see if there is a race, it'll be in the primary rather than in the general. I think there's only a couple dozen really competitive legislative races in the fall. And some of them are here in Mecklenburg County,
right,
which you want to talk about later. But generally speaking, there's not as much competition as people would think.
And you said, Michael, he didn't say this. Jim said this in an article that he wrote recently, that candidates can now win with 30% of the vote instead of 40% of the vote. And I'm just curious why it doesn't have to be 51%. How can you win with 30% of the vote?
Well, you can. I mean,
is
that's
it a law? State, what happened? Is it a law?
Well, it used to be a majority. It used to be 51%, 50 plus one. And minorities decided that was, or thought that was, discriminatory, because white candidates would almost always win when it was a majority requirement. And then in the 80s, they reduced it to 40%. And then this past year, they reduced it to 30%.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about congressional races, particularly the 9th is of interest to a lot of people. That's the Robert Pittenger District. And we'll also be talking about some of the other legislative races as we go through the hour with Dr. Michael Bitzer from Catawba College, Jim Morrill from the Charlotte Observer, Jane Whitley, the chair of the Mecklenburg County Democratic Party, and Chris Turner, the chair of the Mecklenburg County Republican Party. We're coming to you from Birdsong Brewing in Noda on Charlotte Talk. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're coming to you today from Birdsong Brewing in Nodaw for a political discussion in advance of the Tuesday primaries. Michael Bitzer, a frequent guest, often guest host of this program, is here from Catawba College. Jim Morrill, a political reporter, a longtime reporter for the Charlotte Observer. Jane Whitley with the Democratic Party and Chris Turner with the Republican Party. You see, Michael, a direct correlation between Donald Trump's voter performance and what will happen in congressional races in this state. You say that the split-the-ticket voter is an extinct species. Why?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we have basically sorted ourselves into the respective tribes. I mean, you hear the term tribalism. You hear party loyalty. It is very much, if you self-identify as a partisan, you are going to typically vote 90% of the time for that party. And even if you say that you're an independent, but you lean to one party over the other, you vote just as much as a partisan does. So I think what we have seen over several decades is the parties have sorted themselves. Mm-hmm. The Republicans are now the party of conservatives. Democrats are becoming much more the party of liberals. Yes, there are a number of folks that identify as moderates, but they tend to lean to one party over the other.
So a couple of years ago when we were talking about this, going into the presidential election, the people in the middle are the largest group of people, and they seem to be underrepresented, or at least they were then. Has that changed?
It has changed, and I think you have to take into account that even though independents say they make up the vast plurality, like 40, 42%, when you get down to actually voting, those pure independents, those people that tend to split evenly, about 9, 10% of the electorate. So if you've got 90% of the electorate that says, I'm going to vote for my party, and you've got about 10% who may or may not show up, if you're a partisan operative, if you're a strategist, if you're a candidate, you want the people who are 90% assured going to vote for you to get out to vote. You don't want to necessarily worry about somebody who, well, yeah, wins the election again and not vote. So I think it's a strategy, certainly, that candidates and campaigns have to be concerned about.
For those people, the election is Tuesday. I just want to point that out. So let's talk about some specific races. The Congressional 9th District Republican incumbent Robert Pittenger is facing former Charlotte pastor Mark Harris. There is another candidate in that race, isn't there, Jim Morrill?
There is a guy from Cumberland County, but he hasn't raised any money. So
it's Mark Harris and Robert Pittenger. So it's one thing to have a competitive race in a contest where you don't have an incumbent. It's another thing to have a competitive race where you do. And you're the Republican guy here, Chris. What does that mean? What does that tell you about your incumbent, that there's a very competitive race between two people, one of whom lost the last time by 134 votes?
So, as Mike, you know, as party officials, we are unable to comment about individual races.
Doesn't mean I can't.
Primaries. but I think we are always encouraged to see people that want to run for office. There was a close race. We're expecting a close race in the fall as well. We know that a large amount of the votes that come out of the 9th District for that race come out of Mecklenburg County, and then another significant portion comes out of Union County. And so the votes matter here for that race. I'm impressed with how close of a race we've got right now, how close the candidates are working, and we look forward to, once that race is over, to getting out and working for the winner.
So, Jane, does it help the Democrats and your candidates in that particular district that it's so tight on the Republican side?
Yes. And we love to see the Republicans get out and fight each other. I won't lie. But we have a really good chance at winning this in the 9th District. As you know, Democrats have not held that seat for over 50 years, if ever. But this time is different. And we have so many different groups who are working towards flipping the 9th. The Democratic Party is going to be investing a lot of time in the 9th District. We have a couple of candidates. And as Chris said, we can't endorse. We have one candidate, Dan McCready, who's raised $2 million. And
he's outraised Robert Pittenger.
Yes, he has. He's outraised Robert Pittenger. He's a former Marine and an entrepreneur in the solar energy industry. Mm-hmm. And most polls say that he is the favored one to win. So but
you also have some mudslinging in that race between Dan McCready and his challengers. So what do the two of you as party operatives tell your various candidates about, particularly in primaries, where one of them is going to win? Mm-hmm. What do you tell them about what they should or shouldn't say and how far they should take this mudslinging? Because some damage could be done in the general election. I'll start with you, Chris.
Yeah, and what we tell them at every event that we host, that the day after the primary, we all have to come together and work for the Republican Party. And I think the same would be true for the Democratic side. We point out that any damage that you do to the Republican brand essentially hurts you because you have to carry that brand through the November election. And so we work very hard to make sure that as a party, we do not get engaged and there's no party mudslinging going on. That the candidates, we remind them that they win on issues, not on negativity. And we plan on working for either candidate when the race is over.
Boy,
Mike, I think it's fair to point out that even though these guys don't pick a side in a primary, the national parties do. Mm-hmm. The National Republican Party, Paul Ryan, starting with the Speaker of the House, has come out in support of Robert Pittenger. Other
evidently, so is, so is the president.
The vice president was down here.
Yeah.
And Nancy Pelosi, the Democratic leader in the House, is raising money that supports Dan McCready. So their national parties have both taken sides.
Would you rather, Jane, that Jim not have mentioned Nancy Pelosi's name?
I'm fine with it.
Okay.
We are as well.
I'm sure. It's Danny Hoyer's there.
Mark Harris, as I said, narrowly lost to Robert Pittenger last time, 2 years ago, 134 votes. How do you handicap his chances this time, Michael? What's different, if anything?
Probably the fact that there isn't a major third party, third candidate in the race in the primary is probably going to be a key factor in that. I think, you know, as others have noted, I think the key votes are going to be out of Mecklenburg. But more importantly, I'm starting to look at Union County. Hmm. That seems to be a very strong base. Both candidates, you know, need those votes coming out of there. Pittenger had a very strong base out of Mecklenburg. Harris had his base kind of split between Mecklenburg and Union County. The rest of the counties down towards Fayetteville, Cumberland County, you know, provided some votes, but I think the battle is here in Mecklenburg and in Union County for it.
On the Democratic side of that race in the 9th, Jim, you mentioned that you compared this, and other people have compared this, to the Connor Lamb's race in Pennsylvania. It was a Donald Trump district in the presidential race. Connor Lamb comes in for a special election, and he takes the district as a Democrat. Why do you make that comparison to this race?
Well, for a couple reasons. One is that both candidates are alike in the fact that they're both former Marines.
Yeah.
They're both about the same age. Dan McCready, I think, is 34. They're both moderates, you know, and the district that Connor Lamb won in Pennsylvania was more Republican. Trump carried that by 20 points. And as Dr. Bitzer said, he carried the 9th district by 11 points a couple of years ago. So the layout of the land might be a little bit more favorable to a Democrat down here.
Mike, I would say the distinction between that race and this race is that it was a special election, that it was the voters were looking at just the candidate. There was no conversation about there being a Speaker Pelosi at risk. And so our candidates have the opportunity, especially in some of the more conservative counties, to go in and not just pitch their argument as them being an individual better candidate, but also talking about the risk that's there about losing the majority and losing some of the movements that we've seen already.
Who's got the best shot of winning in both these races, both the Republican and the Democratic primary in the 9th? Michael.
I would have to give the edge on the Democratic side to McCready, just because he's got much more name recognition and he's got the institutional resources. He's got the funding. I would have to say it would be a shocker if Cano pulled it off. On the Republican side, I mean, there have been some polls that have come out to show Pittenger with a pretty substantial lead, but in this kind of environment, I would be very cautious in terms of trying to understand where the votes are coming from and who is showing up. Mm. And I think both of them fit the Republican profile in the area. Again, if you're talking about turnout, maybe 15% for Tuesday in total.
Wow.
It is literally going to mean every vote will matter and will matter more at that kind of a level.
Now, Robert Pittenger, I'm sorry, you want to say something, Jane? You want to jump in there?
Yeah, I was just going to say that as of yesterday, the Democrats have won 42 special elections across the country. So it is looking good for the Democrats.
Okay. Robert Pittenger and Mark Harris have both wrapped themselves in the Trump flag. They're trying to out-Trump themselves. And in the other race, the Dan McCready and Christian Cano race, there's another comparison to what happened in Pennsylvania, because that candidate, Connor Lamb has been called a Democrat in name only because he's pretty conservative on some key issues. And Christian Cano calls McCready a Democrat in name only. On what does he base that criticism?
Well, I think that he is very progressive. He makes no bones about that. And, you know, he's for impeachment of President Trump as soon as he gets up there.
He being Cano.
Yes, he being Cano.
Yeah.
And McCready is not. McCready has held his fire on that. And so I think Christian Cano's got to go after him for something, and that's what he chooses to go after.
Should Democrats, Jane, campaign on the impeachment of the president?
No, I think they should be campaigning on the values of the Democratic Party. That said, there is a role for Congress to play in holding the president to account.
Isn't it a little early to be talking about impeachment? I mean, if you watch MSNBC, it's not. But but isn't it a little early?
I want to see what the Mueller investigation reveals.
Right.
As a voter, I do think that everything should be taken into account, into consideration. But again, I think that our candidates are going to be campaigning on what's best for our state and what's best for our country, rather than on any particular one issue.
And on the other side of the coin, NC Politics says that Cano, I want to call him Cano for some reason, but Cano represents a threat to the blue wave he likes to hashtag, because they say that McCready has the shot at both Democratic voters and conservative-leaning voters, while Cano can't reach either because he is so dogmatic. What makes him dogmatic, Michael?
Well, I think certainly the policies that he's taken, some of the positions, I mean, going, you know, within the Democratic Party, there is this tension going on about how progressive one should be in comparison to what one can be within the district. I think the 9th district, you have to play more towards the moderate if you are going to get some kind of, you know, moderate crossover voting by potentially conservatives. I'm doubtful that a conservative Republican is going to vote Democratic. It's just not in the genes anymore in our particular environment. But people that are kind of in the middle, that perhaps see things going too far in terms of both parties, want somebody to be able to go to Washington and articulate some moderate, you know, voices in terms of the policies to get something done in government.
So McCready's outraised Pittenger. The Democrat has outraised the incumbent Republican in the 9th Congressional District. And the Cook report, the Cook political report, has shifted the 9th from likely Republican to lean Republican. Jim, are the two connected? Is something going on? What's going on?
Yeah, they're connected. I mean, I think that McCready and other candidates, like the woman in from Greensboro in the 13th District who's outraised her Republican opponent, you know, have made news. I mean, people have taken notice of that. Mm. And, you know, you combine that with the atmosphere and the fact that we didn't talk about is that in an off-year election, the out-of-party candidate, out-of-party party usually does well, does better, and picks up congressional seats. So they have that going for them, too.
So the John McLaughlin, who is a GOP pollster, says that there's a lack of enthusiasm among Republican voters, and that could cause serious damage in this upcoming election. But if you look at Trump voters, people who voted for Donald Trump and who are still in his corner, he has done nothing wrong in their mind. They are as happy about him today as they were the day he was elected. Do you see a lack of enthusiasm? You're going to tell me no, of course, but I'm going to ask you anyway.
Well, I want to look beyond just the Trump voters, right? So the number one vote getter in North Carolina in 2016 was Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest. He got more votes than any other candidate on the ballot, including the president, including the governor. There are Republicans that are in Mecklenburg County that are committed to the Republican cause with or without Donald Trump. And so I know that's an issue. I know that folks are going to come out and push and say, you know, Donald Trump did X, Y, and Z. And we have to point out that, you know, more people, people that don't have a lot of income are paying zero taxes for the first time ever in this country. We've got to continue to point out the policies that the Trump administration and Republicans in Washington and Raleigh have put in place. So this idea that Republican turnout is based purely on Trump's behavior, I think, is not actually true.
But isn't there a connection between lower taxes or zero taxes and zero services, lower salaries for police and fire and teachers and toll roads versus roads that we pay for through tax dollars, etc.? Isn't there a connection?
Actually, Mecklenburg County has received more transportation dollars in the last 5 years than it had in the last 25 years under Republican leadership, because they moved transportation from being a politically motivated decision to being one based off of need. And so Mecklenburg County benefits from people like Bill Brawley and other House and Senate representatives who have brought transportation dollars to the city. When it comes to paying police and fire, and they're not getting paid enough, look to your Democratic city council and county commission for not delivering on that.
Let's go very quickly. We have about a minute and a half left. Let's go to the 12th Congressional District. There's not much to talk about there. Alma Adams is the incumbent in the Democratic side. She's running against fellow Democrats Gabriel Ortiz and Patrick Register. They suggest she's too old. She's 71, which is, I think, a year younger than the president. And she says they're just young boys. They're in their 30s. Is age going to be approved to be a factor there, or are there other issues in that race, Jim?
No, age will not be a factor. She's pretty unbeatable, I think, by either candidates in either party.
Despite the generational shift in the Charlotte Democratic city government to all millennials, I mean...
No, a lot of this is demographic, and the fact is that her district is very Democratic, and she's an incumbent.
We'll take a look at some legislative, North Carolina legislative races when we come back with Jim Morrill, the last voice you heard from the Charlotte Observer, Jane Whitley from the Democratic Party, Chris Turner from the Republican Party, and Michael Bitzer from Catawba College. It's Charlotte Talks from Birdsong Brewing. It's Charlotte Talks from Birdsong Brewing in Noda, a special News and Brews edition of the program with Michael Bitzer from Catawba College, Jim Morrill from the Charlotte Observer, Jane Whitley, chair of the Mecklenburg County Democratic Party, and Chris Turner, chair of the Mecklenburg County GOP. The state Democratic Party has targeted certain seats in the legislature. The list was released, I believe, in April. What criteria, Michael, did they use to choose the seats they were going to target?
I don't know that they necessarily released the specific context of it, but I think what they were looking at were certainly districts that could have the potential of benefiting from whatever Democratic wave we get. So if the district swings maybe 5 points from Republican to Democrat, you know, you can start to pick out these districts and see how the president performed a year and a half ago, and start to look at the relationship down the ballot. And I think what they were doing was probably looking at suburban areas. They're very strong in terms of urban areas, but I think suburban North Carolina is probably going to be their best bet at this point. There may be some rural areas that if a moderate conservative Democrat gets the nomination for the general campaign, they could be competitive in. But, you know, I think the big goal right now is to break the supermajority. I would be hard-pressed to see anybody who would say Democrats would be able to capture one or the other chamber with majority votes, but tell me how big the wave is. Is it a tsunami?
Yeah.
Then all bets are off.
Chris Turner was right a little while ago when he said that the Democrats gerrymandered when they were in power. He's absolutely right. They did, but they've been gerrymandered back in the other direction. So, Jim, how difficult does that make it for Democrats to really make any substantive inroads in taking back the legislature at this point until the court decides what the maps are going to look like?
Well, I think Republicans have the upper hand right now in the way the districts are drawn. But having said that, a lot of the districts have been changed in the last couple of years, and there are competitive races in Mecklenburg County and a few across the state. I think there's one Republican district, at least one in Southeast Charlotte, that's represented by a Republican that Roy Cooper carried as a Democrat in 2016. Yeah. So, and there are some other races that are competitive either because of the candidates or because of the special circumstances surrounding them. So, we could see more competitive races here than we usually do.
If the national midterms are being talked about as a referendum on Donald Trump, are the local midterms, including this primary, the statewide midterms, a referendum on the legislature and HB2? Michael? Am I taking too far a leap here with that?
I think there could be potential special circumstances where that could be. But I think broader across the state, I'm not real sure that that's going to be the driving force in contest.
Go ahead, Jim.
There's one race.
Exactly. I was going to go to it.
There could be a referendum on HB2, and the candidate, one of the candidates, is here tonight. But
which one?
That would be the Beth Monahan Dan Bishop race, and Dan Bishop had a big hand in writing HB2. He's a Republican from Southeast Charlotte, and Beth Monahan is a Republican from Southeast Charlotte. And I think she's hoping to get a lot of unaffiliated voters and moderates, and Dan Bishop would tell you that she's relying on Democrats, too.
And she's motivated. I feel silly talking about her when she's standing 10 feet from me, but she's motivated because she was personally offended by HB2 because of a family situation. And is her personal story enough to resonate with voters to push them away from Dan toward her into a more moderate Republican viewpoint?
We'll find out on Tuesday.
What do you think?
I'm not sure.
I'm talking to Chris Turner. Oh, what do you think?
Yeah, I think we talk a lot about President Trump, and we talk about the bigger issues. I think each candidate has to go into their district and explain local issues that matter to their voters. I think HB2 is, there was a big referendum on the actions related to HB2 in the last mayoral election, and that was punishing Jennifer Roberts for taking actions that hurt our city and hurt our county.
Not the legislature?
For the local ordinance, yeah, she was 100% behind the local ordinance,
the legislature could have kept their fingers out of it.
It was an illegal action. It was against the law under the Dillon rule for the city to even take that action. And so the state had to take some action. I don't think we are, as Republicans, want to re-legislate HB2. We think we've seen that play out in elections. We saw it play out in 2016 elections. I don't think Democrats necessarily want to legislate or bring that up as an issue either. We won almost every major council of state position other than two, and we lost the governor's race. So I think both parties are ready to move past that and talk about local issues that matter today.
So we have Dan Bishop and Beth Monahan running as the Republicans. There are Democrats running. Is that right, Jane?
Yes, there are lots of them. In fact, there is a Democrat running in every single legislative race across the state. All 170, and there is a Democrat running in every single race in Mecklenburg County. And I think that HB2 is still an issue because this is about basic human dignity and equality. So it's more than just a bill that should have never been passed. And when our local city representatives, whom we elect, decide to make policy to make sure that everyone is treated equally under the law, the legislators in Raleigh have no business trying to undo that, because we are a city that welcomes everyone and that wants everyone treated fairly. And so those are the issues that our Democratic candidates are running
on. So, Michael, this district, this is a Democratic enclave in Mecklenburg County. We're surrounded by red. But if Dan Bishop, what's better for the Democrats? Is it better? Do they have more of a chance to win against Dan Bishop than they would against his challenger if she wins in the primary?
I think certainly Dan Bishop could be viewed as kind of the poster author of HB2, and certainly that legacy of that divisive issue could play in terms of that district.
But do you think there's voter fatigue about HB2? Aren't we tired of talking about it?
I think we've...
And the crowd turns.
I'll let the crowd answer, and apparently it seems in a very self-selective opinion. No. So I think, you know, it is, again, the issue of mobilizing and energizing.
Okay.
And if people, we're almost to the point of, it's not just about partisanship, it's about negative partisanship. It's about how much can you attack, how much can you make fearful, how much can you feel threatened by the other side to get people to show up and to vote. And that's a commonality, not just here in Mecklenburg County, but across the country.
So in one of North Carolina's Senate races, you have a Democrat, Joel Ford, who's been there for 6 years. He's facing challenges from Mushtaba Muhammad, Roderick Davis, and Tim Wallace, who is also here tonight, by the way. Why so many challengers, Jim?
Well, I think Joel Ford has been controversial in that he's decided that to get things done in Raleigh, you have to work with Republicans sometimes, and that's an alien idea to a lot of people.
Is that being Democrat in name only, or is that simply doing what used to be done all the time, walking across the aisle and making a deal?
It's a little more complicated than that. I mean, okay. Some of his opponents would say that he's out of step with the district, that he's too conservative personally. And he ran for mayor last time, as you remember, and I think he finished in third place. He didn't do very well when he ran for mayor. And so I think a lot of that is sort of still being felt.
So he's been accused of being an appeaser because of his walking across the aisle. Is that a fair criticism?
It's absolutely what Democrats are saying about him.
Well, Jane...
no comment.
Ford also says that unless Democrats in the state come up with an agenda that will appeal to rural and suburban North Carolina, we will continue to be in the minority. Jane, do you agree with that?
I think that we do have to spread our message out to the rural areas. I grew up in a rural area, an Ellis Crossroads in Rowan County. But we have a lot of commonalities in terms of the economic message. And yes, I'm aware that living in a larger city like Charlotte, we have more, we're going to elect more Democrats. And that this is where...
So how do you do it in the rural areas? How do you convince people out there who don't trust the city slickers that you have a plan that favors them over what the Republicans are doing for them?
Well, and that's a good question. And right now we have a state party chair, Wayne Goodwin, who is also from Hamlet, and he's doing a listening tour throughout rural North Carolina and talking one-on-one to people, because our message works as well with rural voters as metropolitan voters, as long as we are talking to people and listening to the things that matter to those voters. And most of the times, it is the same thing. It's pocketbook issues. It's how you are treated. It's how you're treated in the workplace. Are you making more than you were before? Are you doing better? So those are the same things that matter no matter where you are, and I think that's what we're doing.
Spectrum News just did a poll of 526 registered voters in North Carolina to get their opinions on the midterms as well as approval ratings for the president and for the governor. 49% approved of the job Roy Cooper is doing, as opposed to 26% who don't and 24% who aren't sure. 50% of those polled disapproved of the job President Trump is doing. 43% approve, 7% aren't sure. What's your reaction to that, Chris?
So I think there's a couple of things that are part of this. One would be that we are not telling the full story, and we need to do a better job of that. Roy Cooper's sitting on $250 million worth of hurricane relief money, and he hasn't distributed a single dime of that out for Hurricane Matthew. That was 2 years ago. I know we're getting a lot of works. He's sitting on $250 million and hasn't done a thing with it. He's worked to get a $60 million slush fund from oil companies so that he can do whatever he wants with that money. We've got to do a better job in Mecklenburg County of telling that story, and that's something that we have to do. And related to HB2, Republicans came to the table to Roy Cooper 6 months after it was passed and said, let's compromise, let's get rid of this. The local ordinance was a bad bill because it broke the law, and Republicans came to compromise with that soon after it was passed. And Roy Cooper said no to that. It wasn't until after he won the governor's race that Jennifer pulled the bill, the local ordinance bill, and took away all of those rights. It was a Democratic mayor who said she gave those rights and then took those away. It was not a Republican that did that. And so It's only a fact that she withdrew the ordinance after Governor Cooper got elected.
Okay, so I'll get back to the spectrum, Paul, because a lot of facts and figures in this. On the other hand, Jane, 47% of North Carolina voters say the state is headed in the right direction. 31% say it's going in the wrong direction. 22% aren't sure. So since the legislature pretty much runs the show, if it's going in the right direction, do you have a shot?
Well, I think I'd look at Governor Cooper's ratings on that as well, because the I also read that poll, and the governor has higher ratings than the legislature. And he's doing very well, and doing even with the Republican legislature. To give him the Democrats in there that can help him get the job done that he is doing for the people of North Carolina, that is going to be key to whether or not we progress.
So when Spectrum asked voters if the November election for the North Carolina General Assembly were held today, which candidate would you vote for? 44% said the Democratic candidate, 37% said a Republican, 17% undecided, 2% were voting for somebody else. Is that, Jim, a shift of any consequence?
I don't think so. It isn't. I mean, I think it's consistent with generic polls around the country about congressional races and other races. But, you know, the General Assembly has made a lot of controversial decisions. Some would support them and some don't in the last few years since they've taken over. And, you know, so I think it will be a referendum to some extent on the General Assembly and what they've done.
But when you combine that fact, the if the election were held today, most people would vote for the Democrat. When you combine that with the higher approval ratings that Governor Cooper has, the low approval rating that President Trump has, the fact that 53% of those polled in the Spectrum poll said the country was going in the wrong direction, what does that tell you, Chris Turner?
One, it's the midterm after the first election of a president. If you look at President Obama in his second term, he lost the majority in Congress in his second year. This is something that typically happens on the generic ballot. I think we have to move past that and start telling the story. The teacher raise that was in the budget this year that balanced our budget and brought us $500 million of additional revenue, not deficit, which we were in under Democrats, was vetoed by Governor Cooper. And if it weren't for the supermajority, those teachers wouldn't have gotten that pay raise. And so we've got to get from being generic to being specific.
So I have 20 seconds. I want to give you a chance, Jane, to have you tell us what those figures that I just handed out mean to you as a Democrat.
I think they mean a blue wave's coming. And I think that you're going to see a lot of people getting very involved and very engaged in the process to elect legislators who can help Governor Cooper to do the job that needs to be done in North Carolina.
Jane Whitley is the chair of the Democratic Party in Mecklenburg County. Chris Turner is her counterpart, the chair of the Republican Party in Mecklenburg County. Jim Morrill, political reporter for the Charlotte Observer. Michael Bitzer, chair of the Department of Politics at Catawba College. And Birdsong Brewing. Thank you all for being here, and thank you all for the hour.